Good morning. Welcome to Focus. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. Colleges and universities have long been important centers for research into disaster preparedness and recovery, but they have often been criticized for failing to take their own advice when it comes to their own campuses. In this hour of Focus, we'll be talking about what higher education is doing to prepare for crisis, everything from natural disaster to random acts of violence, and we'll be talking specifically about the University of Illinois here in Urbana-Champaign. And our guest is Todd Short. He is the Emergency Planning Lieutenant with the University of Illinois Police Department. His responsibility is emergency planning for the campus. And we'll talk about that very topic here this morning in this part of the show. And people who are listening are certainly welcome to call with questions. If you're in Champaign-Urbana, here where we are, the number is 333-9455. You also are welcome to call if you're not in Champaign-Urbana. And the toll-free line, if you'd like to use that, is 800-222-9455. We do also have email, so if you want to send us an email, you can do that. And the address is will-talk@illinois.edu. At any point here, people are welcome to call or to write. If you do call in, we hope people can be brief, just so we can get as many callers as possible. But questions and comments are certainly welcome. Thanks very much for being here.
David, appreciate you having me.
There always has been the possibility, I'm sure, you know, people understand on colleges for there to be some kind of disaster in the sense that depending on where you are, you could have a hurricane, flood, a tornado, could have a chemical spill, something like that. In recent years, I think people are more aware of the fact that it's possible that you could have a violent individual on the campus intent on hurting other people. So that's maybe a way that things have gotten a little bit different. I don't know if you have a sense of how over time disaster planning has changed as the nature of the disaster you're anticipating has changed.
Well, that's a good question, David. One of our primary planning assumptions that we always use as our overall guideline when we try to plan for emergencies is, number one, they can happen anytime, anywhere, summer, fall, spring, doesn't matter what the academic calendar is. Mm-hmm. So regardless of whether it's a natural disaster, tornado, hurricanes, floods, man-made disasters, active shooters, if you will, technological disasters, major power outages, a lot of our planning processes focus on all of them simultaneously. There's going to be differences and there's going to be similarities in our overall approach to how we deal with one incident over another. Mm-hmm. But if an incident occurs on campus that impacts our academic mission, our research mission, our operational mission, the people that we've designated to do certain functions, whether in an emergency operations center capacity or an incident command post capacity, a public information capacity, will fulfill similar roles and responsibilities as we respond to those incidents.
Mm-hmm. One of the big challenges, and we talked a little bit about this before we get going, is the fact that you have here at the university a pretty significant transient population. That is, every year, there are a lot of people who leave and a whole bunch of new people come. So in a sense, whatever kind of orientation you do with folks to try to get them aware of what they need to do, you have a whole bunch of people that you're going to have to give them that lecture again. Every year.
Absolutely. Getting the message out, getting our information out, whether it be through crime prevention or emergency preparedness programs, is always a challenge. And your comment about our transient population is absolutely accurate. You know, minimally every 4 years, we generally have a pretty good turnover. Obviously, we need to make sure that whatever messages we're portraying, we're being as proactive as possible in getting those messages out. From the very start of freshman orientation, when our new students are joining us at the University of Illinois, we make a very staunch effort to make sure that we're getting messages out to our students, our faculty, our staff, so that they know how to take appropriate personal protective actions. Because ultimately, one of the things we harp on quite a bit is inevitably everybody has a certain level of responsibility for their own safety, whether that's paying attention to your surroundings when you're leaving your building that you work in at 5 o'clock and walking to your vehicle so that you can have safe travels home. If you're a student and walking from your apartment to your residence hall to the library and back, whether it's 8 o'clock in the morning, 8 o'clock at night, 2 o'clock in the morning, similar personal protective action should always be taken.
You know, I think if you look at the advice that, institutions like ours get for planning, I think one of the things you're going to one of the first things you're going to see on the list is you have to have a system to get information to people in the event of an emergency, notifying that, there is an emergency, and then perhaps telling them what you would like them to do. And now we have a system. It's been in place now for maybe a couple of years to try to do that, to have a brief, consistent, timely message go out to people, and you deliver messages to people's computers, and you can send a message to a cell phone and so forth. Given though that there is so much coming into people, how do you make sure that you, particularly with your student population, how do you make sure that people are actually paying attention?
That's a very, very good question, David. I think the key to ensuring that the largest audience is reached and paying attention to the messages that we send them in an emergency and or crisis situation is to make sure you're using multiple mechanisms to communicate. Mm-hmm. Case in point, the days of just using text message notification to reach your faculty, your staff, and your students is gone. Using text as one notification mechanism will always be prevalent. We will utilize it as long as it's, you know, applicable technology. That being said, the use of mass mail being sent simultaneously with text messages is very, very important. Simultaneously, we have something called an emergency web alert system, which basically pops up a red box on college homepages throughout campus, Illinois.edu, the police department, college's homepages, for example. It basically is a big red box that pops up. It says emergency. Click here for details, and you click on the box, and similar type of information that we're sending out via text and mass mail would be transposed on your, across your computer screen. We're in the age of social media. One of the things we tie in with all of our emergency notification system processes now is Facebook and Twitter. So essentially, from the police department, when we push the button on an emergency message, we're not just sending a text message anymore. We're simultaneously sending text, mass mail. Emergency web alert system is activated. Facebook and Twitter is automatically activated. Now, we have pre-scripted messages that we use with specific information regarding what we know at the time of the emergency, and then we can reload that system and send subsequent messages once we get more information, depending, again, on what the situation is that we're dealing with. Mm. The key is multimodal communication. We have other mechanisms that we can use, but those are our big five that we count on heavily.
And then particularly when it comes to your doing your orientation when you have new people coming to the campus, what is it that you tell them then that you, other than if one of the, we want you to sign up for this so that you'll get the messages, and then when the message comes, we want you to read it and do whatever it says, you know, take this seriously. Beyond that, is that the most basic thing that you try to communicate to people?
You know, David, if we can get those two messages across, we have a very strong chance of succeeding during an emergency. One of the things that we've noticed after reading after-action reports from Virginia Tech and Northern Illinois is that in crisis situations, people don't always pay attention to the messages that they're receiving. As a matter of fact, and as surprising as this may be, a lot of times when there's a location given in an emergency message, people will want to leave their place of employment, their place of study, and go directly to the area that we don't want them to go because they want to see what's going on. Yeah. They want to see what's happening. And I think it's just human curiosity at work. At the same time, again, if we can get those messages across that say, please pay attention. Please sign up for this service. We can't make you sign up for it, but it would really, really be good for you if you did. And then when we get those messages, understand that the content in those messages is important. Take 30 seconds, take 15 seconds and read it, internalize it, and then take the appropriate action based on the information that we're giving you.
Yeah. I think that I'm sure that in recent years, the thing that people think most about is the scenario of the violent individual on the campus. Now, we could still have a tornado, here and other places they could have other stuff to deal with. But this is the thing that probably worries people the most. And I'm also guessing that should something like that happen, say something like that happens on the campus, that for the vast majority of the people, they will be perfectly safe if they just stay where they are. Now, this may, again, go back to your problem is, you know, that people want to know what's going on and want to go what's happening. But if people are really concerned by their security, chances are, wherever they are, as long as they stay there, they should be just fine.
Good point, David. One of the things, again, that we try to stress when we complete our building emergency action plans on campus is, regardless of the length of content in your building plan, it really boils down to two major issues. Number one, if something is happening in my building, should I evacuate? Mm. Is the danger so severe that I should evacuate the building if it's safe to do so, of course? If the answer to that is yes, it's safe to do so and I can evacuate, we advocate that strongly. Conversely, if something is happening in your building, in your area where you are at, and you cannot evacuate, we want you to shelter in place. And shelter in place is essentially defined as hunkering down wherever you are, securing yourself in the room that you're in, barricading your door, a.k.a. letting many of the survivors of the Virginia Tech incident did exactly that. Because they pushed a cabinet and a desk and chairs in front of a door. It caused an impediment to the person who was initiating that attack on their campus. And since the clock was ticking and he wanted to do as much damage as he could do, he was basically going door to door. And when he met resistance, he went to the next door. So the two major action items out of any building emergency plan are, if I can evacuate, how do I do that? And then if I can't evacuate, how do I protect myself where I am currently?
Yeah. So, and again, I guess we talked a little bit about this where we were going, that one of the things that you do encourage people to think about is wherever the building is that they're in, at some point think about, if I had to get out of here, how would I do that?
Absolutely.
Is that always pretty clear?
You know, it depends on the building that you're in on campus. We have 400-ish buildings on campus that are all designed differently. Mm-hmm. At the same time, they all got ingress and egress points. So one of the things that we try to preach to our faculty and our staff and our students is, when you're sitting in your classroom and you're sitting in your office, if something bad were to happen right now, you started hearing gunshots, loud explosions, loud noises for that matter in your building, what's your quickest way out of the building? And then when you get out of the building, where exactly are you going to go? Are you going to be running for the biggest tree in the parking lot? Is that where your evacuation staging area is going to be? Let's make sure we know that as a group collectively in that building, because our students are going to be coming and going at all hours of the day. Mm-hmm. Academically wise, we understand that. Many of the faculty and staff actually work in those buildings, and those are the people that we rely on when it comes operational time to actually enact the procedures that are in our buildings.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of, you know, what would be here, say what would be in terms of natural disaster, what might be the most likely thing to happen. And I suppose it would be a tornado. I guess there could be some other things, but that maybe would be the big one. And the thing about tornadoes, as we know, is that they can actually hit pretty quick.
They can.
You know, that's why here on the station for so many years, at the very least, we try to give people advance warning and we try to say we think it might happen between these hours. So, you know, pay attention to what's going on. And then also we try to say, think about if you're in some sort of a building where the safest place to be would be. So here now we're talking about a campus when we have a lot of very large public buildings and we could have significant numbers of people in those buildings. How do you approach the idea of trying to make sure that in every building there is a secure place for people to go if they need to, and how do you make sure people know where that place is?
Good questions. For those buildings that have basements, obviously the tornado shelter locations would be in the basement of those buildings. Many of our buildings on campus do not have basements. So we want to make sure that people know to go to the interior rooms, locations, hallways, underneath stairwells, where the structural integrity of the building is usually the best. We work very closely with fire safety and co-compliance through facilities and services on campus to make sure that people in buildings know where those locations are. It's an ongoing, forever task. We're actually having a meeting with the National Weather Service next week, that being the members of the police department from fire safety on campus, the National Weather Service, and one of our professors on campus to start an initiative where we are putting tornado shelter location signs with arrows in every building on campus.
That's good. And I guess we probably aren't all that far off from the severe storms preparedness times that are set aside. The Illinois and Indiana both have them, and they're usually around the same time, and they're well in advance of when you start to get your severe storm. So chances are they're probably in February or
something like that. David, with the warm weather we've been having this winter, you just never know.
Yeah. Our guest in this part of Focus is Lieutenant Todd Short. He is Emergency Planning Lieutenant with the University of Illinois Police Department, and he's the guy who's responsible for emergency planning for the campus of the University of Illinois here, Urbana-Champaign. And that's what we're talking about disaster preparedness on college campuses, this one specifically. 333-9455 is the local number here, so people are in and around Champaign-Urbana on the campus. If you have questions, you can certainly call. We do also have email. If you'd like to shoot us an email, you can do that too, which is will-talk@illinois.edu. And of course, anybody can call in, and if it would be a long distance call for you, use the toll free, and that's 800-222-9455. Just for a second, we talked a little bit earlier about the system that you have to try to get out emergency information to staff and students, people who are on the campus. There is another very important constituency that are interested in information when something like this happens, and that is the families of students. Is there some way that you have set up for people to find out if there's something going on, their children are on the campus, they're worried, they can find out what's going on?
Well, we designed our emergency notification registration site that would give people a text message and email. We allowed the person with the U of I net ID and password to be able to sign up to three people under their account, significant others, loved ones, things that people that would fall into those categories, anybody that they would want. And that has certainly substantially increased the population of the people that get those messages. So we wanted to make sure that not only were faculty, staff, and students able to get the message, but parents and other loved ones as well would probably like to have that information, and we give them the opportunity to do that now.
So what happens? I get this text that says that something's going on in the college where my daughter is, and I think, oh my God, what is it? My first impulse is I'm going to want to call somebody to find out. Is there a place that parents then can go to try to get some more information?
Well, we've actually established an emergency 24/7 call center in the event of the big one, the big tornado, the active shooter, New Madrid fault going off in southern part of the state that affects the campus, something where we're not going to be able to put a Band-Aid on the incident, if you will, in an 8, 12, or 24-hour period. We will staff this emergency 24/7 call center with approximately 300 U of I employees that work in student affairs that we train twice a year on procedures and protocols that will be used in the call center. So we'll establish a toll-free number that allow people to be able to call in and do that. The one thing I would like to make sure everybody understands is we are not going to activate the call center until it is safe to get our people at the location where the call center will be activated. In other words, if there is an active shooter at the Illini Union, the second text message that I send out is not going to be for the call center activation if the person with the weapon has not been neutralized. I don't want any of my call center people in harm's way getting to the call center until the situation's been successfully mitigated. Mm-hmm. So as soon as it's safe to get the 24/7 call center up and operational, it will be. And we will have generally 45-ish people working four-hour shifts for a 24-hour period to meet the demand.
I wonder how have things changed for emergency response on the campus in this time period now, where at one point there was a campus fire department that I would expect for a lot of things they would be first responders. Well, we don't have a campus fire department anymore. The responsibilities have been taken on by the fire departments of the two cities, Urbana and Champaign. If there's fire on the campus, they're the ones that are going to now respond. So now, rather than having a University of Illinois fire department that you might be coordinating with, you're coordinating with two different fire departments and two city governments. Has that made things more complicated?
You know, in theory, I suppose that it could have been an issue. it really wound up being a positive thing for the campus, because now when we train and we exercise at the campus and or the county level, we exercise together. In other words, last October of 2011, we ran an exercise that would have forced an evacuation for the entire campus. That would include resources from the city of Champaign, city of Urbana, Champaign County, and the state of Illinois. Law enforcement, the fire service, emergency medical services, to name but a few disciplines. You'd also be bringing in folks like the Salvation Army, the Red Cross, the United Way. If we're evacuating buildings, we'd have to make sure that we've got shelters for people to stay at. So when we took this interagency multi-jurisdictional approach to our training or exercise, number one, it put everybody on a first-name basis with each other, which is very, very important. And I usually get on the pulpit and I say things like, if you know the first name of the person that you're going to be working with for the next 8, 12, 24 hours under a very stressful situation, it helps lubricate the machine of emergency management. It's very, very important. Because if you have those kind of personal relationships and you know what the expectations are going into a real event based upon what you've exercised, you have a very good chance to succeed. And that's something we take a lot of pride in Champaign County. Bill Keller, who was our Champaign County Emergency Manager for the last 20 years, he retired in Thanksgiving weekend of 2011, was very, very instrumental in making sure that people played nicely with each other. And historically, we've done a pretty good job with that. It's getting better every year. It's nice when we have incidents or events, whether they're planned or unplanned. We've got unofficial St. Patrick's Day coming up on March 2nd. It's nice to have the same players in the room that you exercise with multiple times annually.
You touched on something that I had thought about, and that was if you had to evacuate the campus or large segments of the campus. We have students here from all over the country and all over the world. Now, I guess that if you had to say to some students, well, look, we're really sorry, but you're just going to have to go home. Some people could actually do that. They could go back to their home. A lot of people, that's really a very difficult option, particularly when you're talking about international students. They can't just pack up their suitcase and hop in a car and drive home. How do you think about that, the fact that indeed you might, for at least a short period of time, you might have to house and care for a significant number of people, and then there might also be some other people where it would be actually a little bit more of a long-term, you know, who knows what it would be, but a little bit more of a long-term thing?
Sure. Those are some of the issues we discussed for hours during our exercise. There are going to be a large number of people that will be able to go home. We want people to go home if they possibly can. If we have a large international student base on campus, more than 5,000 students that just can't hop in a car and drive across the ocean. So there are shelter agreements in place throughout Champaign County where we can actually have thousands of people basically sheltered for a certain amount of time. Louisiana State University had to deal with this exact same issue post-Katrina. And Gustav, where they had thousands of people from New Orleans that were coming to the Baton Rouge campus that needed shelter. Whether it's churches or high schools or even university buildings that are still inhabitable that we can use, we would utilize all those resources.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, other questions for people who are listening, questions and comments are certainly welcome. We're talking about disaster preparedness on this campus and other college campuses, and people who are listening are certainly welcome to call 333-9455 and toll-free 800-222-9455. One of the things that I want to talk about, and I know you'd be interested in talking about, is the Campus Security Enhancement Act. Let me just ask, well, what is that? Why did it come to being? What was it designed to do?
Post-Virginia Tech, Governor Blagojevich created a governor's security task force team comprised of a lot of people that work in higher ed. And the goal of that task force was to create recommendations for the state of Illinois on what institutions of higher ed should be doing in regards to campus violence prevention and campus emergency operation planning. So two different components. The campus violence prevention plan would be based on trying to stop it before it occurs. the campus emergency operation planning aspect of it would focus on, if it does occur, then how do we respond to that? The recommendations of the task force, which, by the way, when the governor's task force was meeting, NIU actually occurred. So we had multiple incidents that fed information that the task force gave to the state for these recommendations. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, there is a Campus Security Enhancement Act that, as of January 1, 2009, came into effect that said all higher education institutions in the state of Illinois, two-year, four-year, private, public, profit, nonprofit, should have a campus violence prevention plan and a campus emergency operation plan. And you need to train and exercise both of those plans annually. They need to be updated annually, and copies of those plans need to be on file with your local county emergency management agency, the Illinois Emergency Management Agency, regional person, wherever your region is throughout the state, and the Illinois Board of Higher Education if you're a four-year school, or the Illinois Community College Board if you're a two-year school. And the idea is, if you haven't done anything on the campus violence prevention side or the campus emergency operation side, this is your opportunity with these guidelines in the act where you can systematically go through and darn near ensure that you've got a pretty good plan. When you write those plans, the premise of behind having it turned into your local county emergency management director is that if something happens on your campus, there's a strong probability you're going to need outside resources. And when you need those resources, your county emergency management personnel are charged through the state of Illinois to provide those resources for you. So in some ways, your county plan should mirror your campus plan and vice versa. So that's how we decided to go ahead and create our campus violence prevention plan and emergency operation plan with... Basically, they were written in conjunction with what the county had already had in place.
Yeah. One of the things that I wanted to ask you about, and I don't know what kind of reaction you have, but apparently that some reporters in the Chicago area just went out and tried to take a look at higher ed institutions that were just in Cook County. And there are apparently 63 of them. They found that quite a small percentage actually had emergency plans in place, and noted that part of the problem is that while the state has said to institutions that say, we really think it would be a good idea for you to do this, there's really nobody in a position to go to that institution and say, you must do this. And then if you don't, you know, there'll be some kind of consequences.
I read that same article, David, and as soon as this act came out, January 1 of 09, the university took a stance, the police department took a stance, that regardless of whether there was any ramifications if you did not comply with this act, it's an awfully good idea, and I think we have a responsibility and an obligation to our faculty, staff, and students to make sure that we've got a campus plan in place so that we know who we're going to call on to do certain functions, roles, and responsibilities. We need to know where those people are going to go when they get there. They need to know where they're going to sit, what they're going to do specifically. And we found that because we've went through the process of creating these plans, we've been able to fill historic gaps that we had never considered, we had never thought about. If something were to happen on a college campus, regardless of whether there's any administrative teeth to this act or not, mm-hmm. I think if you don't have those plans in place, you're opening yourself up for severe liability, in my very humble opinion. And at the end of the day, it's the right thing to do whether that act is in place or not.
Our guest in this hour of Focus, Lieutenant Todd Short with the U of I Police Department. He's the emergency planning lieutenant for the campus of the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. We'll talk some more about campus disaster preparedness. We'll take a call. We'll take a short break first. This is Focus.
WILL programs are made possible by the Center for Advanced Study, whose Sovereignty and Autonomy in the Western Hemisphere lecture series presents National Identity, Census Data, and Genetics in Uruguay with Monica Sands on Tuesday, January 24th at 4 p.m. in room 614 of the Institute for Genomic Biology.
This is Focus, our morning talk show. I'm David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We are here weekday mornings from 10 until noon. 10 different topics for you every week. Let me mention that on the program in Hour 2, the guest is Michael Erard. He is a senior researcher in the Frameworks Institute. He's a linguist. He's an author. We'll talk about a new book that he's written. The title is Babel No More, and it's about people, and apparently there are, in fact, people who can do this, people who can and have learned enormous numbers of languages. I'm not just talking about two or three. I'm talking about 20 or 30 or more. There are indeed people who can do it, and they're interesting to science because it raises some interesting questions about, are these people's brains different? How is it they are different? How is it they can do this? So we'll be talking about that in Hour 2 of the program today. Just to mention a couple of others, we'll talk about the upcoming presidential elections in Russia on Thursday at 10 with Andrew Cutchins. He is a director and senior fellow at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. And then also we'll talk on Friday about Haiti and what has been going on there and their effort to rebuild after natural disaster. Our guest there will be Laurent Dubois from Duke University. We're here weekday mornings, 10 to noon, 10 different topics for you every week. I always welcome your questions, comments. You can see the schedule by going to our website, which is WILL.illinois.edu. In this hour, we're talking about disaster preparedness on the campus, and our guest is Lieutenant Todd Short. He's the emergency planning lieutenant with the U of I Police Department and is responsible for emergency planning for the campus. Questions are certainly welcome here. We have a caller, and we'll get right to them, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455, email will-talk@illinois.edu. And here's a caller in Urbana, line one. Hello.
Hello, Lieutenant Short. I'm from California, and I'm a senior citizen here in your city. But I'm listening, and I'm wondering, is your disaster preparedness program including earthquake instructions for also not only the students but the professors, and also supply like food and water reserves in case earthquake happens here? Because I know we have a chance of that.
Absolutely. It's a very good question. One of the things that we do on campus with our individual building emergency action plans is actually give information for certain types of emergencies. The Campus Security Enhancement Act was pretty specific in what they wanted in an all-hazards emergency operation plan for the U of I. So what they're basically saying is regardless of the incident, whether it's man-made or technological, or a natural disaster, overall responses should be the same. If we have an F5 tornado and we need to get water and we need to get food, where do we get those things from? One of the things that we've worked really hard with is our private sector partners to make sure that if we need to go to Walmart to pull every bottle of water off the shelf, we can do that. Likewise with food resources, one of our big concerns on campus is if I've got 9,000 or 10,000 undergraduate students in residence halls, I need to make sure that I can keep the flow of food coming in to feed those that live in our residence halls. Likewise with the campus. If for whatever reason we ran out of resources locally, one of the things that we have clearly articulated in our plan is we go to the county to get county resources, food, water, whatever the resource may be. It may be cots, it may be tents, it may be hand washing stations, it may be pallets to put those things on. If for whatever reason we can't get those resources in the county, then we work with our Illinois Emergency Management Agency representative, who actually is in Champaign off of Mattis Avenue. And if we can't get it through the county, then we make that resource request through the state. And Springfield, if they've got the available resources, would send those then into Champaign County for use at the U of I.
I see. So it's widespread, but as you know, earthquakes can often hit a wide area. So I was wondering whether professors have been instructed in these special instances, and also like if they do have any reserve food at the cafeterias and such things like that. Because sometimes in an earthquake, it's very hard to get.
Absolutely. And if, heaven forbid, New Madrid would go off and we'd have multiple states affected, I should say, then obviously resources would be more difficult to come by. We would certainly be at the mercy of the requests coming in to the various state emergency operation centers. If for whatever reason the state of Illinois can't get those resources, then we make a federal declaration and then we ask FEMA for help. FEMA has been pretty clear that local emergencies if we have something like that happen, depending on how widespread it is. They could take up to 4 days to provide resources for us, and that could be anything resource-wise, food, water, structural objects, and the like. One of the things that we've done on campus since 2005 is actually put it's roughly, forgive my number on this, about 2,300 people on campus have gone through emergency management training with me in a lecture discussion format. Specifically, we talk about things like use of the incident command system, and if something bad happens in your building, where do deans and directors and department heads, faculty members, staff go? How do they get fit into the overall operating picture with the University of Illinois?
Mm-hmm.
Heaven forbid New Madrid goes off and we have an earthquake and we can't get into your buildings. What then do we do for resumption of our core critical functions? One of the things that Dave and I were going to get to today if we had time is we're actually kicking off a brand new initiative this week at the university with business continuity planning. And by business continuity planning, I mean specifically, if I work in the College of Engineering and the earthquake has devastated the buildings that contain the College of Engineering, mm-hmm. how then do we make sure that our core critical research and teaching mission continues? Where do we put people if four of our buildings have been completely devastated and they're left in a pile of bricks? So we're actually going to go out starting this week. We had our kickoff meeting yesterday, and we've got 365 campus units targeted that we're going to request create a business continuity plan, starting with the president's office, chancellor's office, provost's office, vice chancellor for research, student affairs, police department, facilities and services. Offices that if something happened on campus are going to be relied upon to provide policy level guidance, resource guidance, and public information guidance. We've got to make sure that they're up and ready to go, regardless of what the emergency is that may impact us.
That sounds wonderful. Very complete. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Well, thank you. Other questions certainly are welcome. 333-9455. Email will-talk@illinois.edu. And also you can call the toll-free line 800-222-9455. Well, I'm sure that when you do disaster planning, you have to imagine the worst and then say, okay, what if that happened? What would we do? Assuming that the campus, something happened, and the campus was truly cut off from the outside world, are there resources in place, in fact, so that at least you could provide people with the basics? There would be food and water. There might be power. I don't know to what extent we can. I know that we do have the capacity to generate power, electricity here on this campus. So, you know, what would happen if it was in the wintertime? You need to keep people warm. They need food and water. You would hope that you can keep your toilets flushing, you know, all those sorts of basic things. Could the campus survive such a thing, and for how long?
Well, I think it'd be difficult. It would depend on the total amount of damage. One of the things that keeps me up at night, David, is a mass-scale power outage that lasts days and days and days. A lot of people on campus probably remember a power outage I believe we had in March of 2009 that occurred on a Sunday.
Yeah, I believe I remember that.
There's been a lot of after-action items based upon what we learned when the campus loses power for a 10, 12, 15-hour mm-hmm. period. That we've been able to remedy. That being said, one of the things that I think people need to understand campus-wide is if something horrible happens, if we have a power outage, if we have a tornado, if we have an earthquake, there's going to be priority action items that will be determined by a defined group of people that are basically defined as our Campus Emergency Operations Center core group, mm-hmm. president, chancellor, provost, to name a few people that serve on that group of people that will come together and make those priority decisions. For example, if we get power up at 4 o'clock in the afternoon and power can be diverted to one part of campus over another, that group is going to be charged with making those decisions to make sure that core critical functions on campus can be sustained. There may be some things that can resume and be saved. There may be other things that, for whatever reason, cannot be resumed immediately or cannot be saved immediately. So those are tough decisions that always occur no matter what the emergency is. And it's a hard pill to swallow for all of us, myself especially. Like I said, those are the things that kind of keep me up at night. But at the end of the day, if you talk to the people in the Gulf after the horrible hurricane seasons and you talk to the people at Tulane University, my colleagues down there, they will tell you unequivocally that there's very difficult decisions that have to be made during an emergency and post-emergency. And when it comes to creating committees and subcommittees and ad hoc committees to deal with those issues, sometimes there's not time to do that. And when immediate life safety needs have to be met, those decisions have to be made very, very quickly for the benefit of all.
Yeah. That's just, I suppose that touches on another issue, that one of the things that makes university campuses different, and that is if you were in a city, I suppose you could make up your plan and you could just say, okay, this is the plan. On a university campus, you can't do that. You know, we're dedicated to this principle that says, well, everybody, at least large numbers of people, need to be involved and consulted. So you can't just make a plan and hand it out and say, okay, this is it, now follow it. How has the need for having opportunities for input, particularly from faculty and staff, make this business more complicated?
You know, we're always seeking input from our faculty and our staff and our students. When we put our plans together, we consulted with multiple groups on campus because Todd Short can't write a plan for the entire campus without knowing how the entire campus runs. There's no way that I could be that naive or that arrogant to go in to facilities and services, for example, and try to come up with a game plan on how we were going to use heavy machinery to clear roadway debris after the tornado goes through. So there was a lot of consultation that went on to develop that plan. It's a comprehensive plan. One of the things, again, I always harp on is the one thing I know about emergency situations is that they do not generally go as I plan them to go. I had the fortunate experience to speak with some friends and colleagues in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, that were affected by the flood that also affected the University of Iowa. I believe it was in June of 2008. Mm-hmm. And they said, lesson number one, never build your campus in a floodplain. That would be the first thing you don't want to do. Fortunately, we haven't done that. Secondly, the people in Cedar Rapids, Iowa made shirts that said, everybody should have a plan. And on the back of those shirts, it said, dot, 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 and understand that that plan will never go according to plan. I thought that was kind of a unique T-shirt, and they spoke of it, you know, with a lot of emotion because their command post locations, their emergency operations center locations, their areas where they gave joint information to the media as the waters were rising were wiped out. So their plan A and about half of their plan B was taken off the table very, very quickly. So they had to make decisions on the run. Where are we going to have our emergency operations center group? Where are we going to have our command post personnel? Where are we going to set up a microphone with power so that we can address ABC, CBS, and NBC? Because they're all coming because this is a front page news story. Flexibility and scalability is so unbelievably important in our plans. We've done a lot of training for people with substantial and significant roles and responsibilities. A lot of times, the things that we're going to plan will work the way we want them to, especially in pre-planned events like an unofficial St. Patrick's Day. Unfortunately, we have a non-plan event, a natural disaster, an active shooter, heaven forbid. There's going to be decisions that we will have to make on the run, on the fly, depending on what we've got. If Clinton Power Plant has an unfortunate nuclear accident, depending on prevailing wind conditions, will affect tremendously our evacuation routes. So it's important to have the plan, but you've got to also understand that it's got to be flexible to make sure that you can do what needs to be done at the time.
Yeah. Well, I find myself wondering, you know, whenever I see news coverage of a big training exercise, and municipalities, they have them, so that they at least have a little bit of practice for the idea, well, okay, what happens a tornado comes through here, and we have large numbers of people who are injured. So we have to try to help them, and then there will be large numbers of people who have to be taken care of and housed and fed, you know, whatever. Or maybe you try to simulate a chemical spill or a weapons of mass destruction attack or, you know, whatever. And I always wonder, can you really make a training exercise that feels real enough so that it will actually help you when it really happens?
I think the key to making a very applicable training exercise is to take things that you know have already happened, whether it's local, national, or international, and use similar scripted events in your exercise program, which is exactly what we do. If somebody were to go into a building with multiple weapons and chain a door, like it showed at Virginia Tech, how would we respond to that? How are we going to breach those doors that are chained to get into the building to begin rescue operations, for an example? It is difficult sometimes, David, to make sure that you've got a realistic scenario. I think you've got to be, again, what we do is we look at after-action reports of other things that have happened, federal, state, and local levels, and we script those exercises to be similar in nature and pattern so that if something were to happen here, what would that look like? Where are we going to park the cars? Where's the perimeter going to be set up? Where are we going to stage the media? When we have casualties, where are we going to put the ambulances to make sure that they can load people up that are hurting, get those folks to the hospital? So you can see it's like a multi-layered onion effect when you do this exercise. These things aren't just for law enforcement. They're just not for the fire service. It's community-wide. And when we do our exercises, we invite the hospitals because there's going to be a hospital component too. I want to know exactly how many people the emergency room can handle before they can't have anybody else come through the double doors. What is the maximum capacity? How many ER nurses do we have? How many docs do we really have? How many patients can they handle with certain levels of acuity? It's very, very important for us to know that. One of the things I often talk about in my profession, in my discipline, the job is never done. Every single time we do an exercise, I wind up going back and rewriting certain portions of our plan. It's never done. Living, breathing documents. They're never on a shelf for very long. Some people in the emergency planning business will talk about mothballs starting to form on the shelves where the binders have been located for the last couple of years. At the University of Illinois, we don't have that luxury. We have federal and state requirements that require us to train and exercise. And when we train and exercise, those binders don't sit on the shelves very long.
So it does sound, though, that you can draw on other people's experiences and look at other things and look at what went well, what didn't, what was that they needed. You know, you could in those cases, I'm sure that you can say now, what were those things that you would have liked to know beforehand, and try and take all that into consideration. But I'm sure that what you say is true, that there's always something that's going to happen that you don't expect or that you can't really plan for.
Almost every time.
We have about 4 or 5 minutes left, and let me just say our guest is Lieutenant Todd Short. He's with the University of Illinois Police Department. He's the emergency planning guy for this campus, and that's what we're talking about. Someone wants to call real quick, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. So you do have, and I don't know if this is a secret, so you can't talk about it, but you do, in fact, have, there is a place, an emergency planning center for the campus, a place that's set up, and it's ready to go, and it's got phones, and it's got computers, and it's got places for people to sit, and it's just sitting there waiting in case such a thing would happen, and everybody knows that's the place where it's going to be.
That's correct. We do have a location on campus where we've got an area where we can do joint information releases with the cities. We can do information releases by ourselves. We call it our Joint Information Center. About a 102-seat auditorium where we can get media in. They can set up tripods with lights and action and camera and that kind of thing. We've got a emergency operations center established for those that will make policy decisions, information-related dissemination decisions, joint information releases, if you will. And resource allocation requests that those in the command post can't make. For whatever reason, we can't acquire. We've got a command post set up, public information officers, incident commanders, safety officers, those that would work in operations, in our planning, our logistics, and our finance. One of the things that people sometimes don't realize is that in all emergency operations, there's a financial component to it. So we want to make sure that we've got checkbooks and credit cards and those types of things ready to go so that if we need to order resources, we can do that. If the power's out and Walmart's not accepting our swipe card, can't swipe a credit card, we probably need to be able to write them a check, those types of issues. And it generally works fairly harmoniously because we've done so much training and exercising. One of the things I hear from my peers at other Big Ten and other major Division I research institutions is, during the event, if we haven't trained our people and they don't know what the expectations are, the operation generally doesn't go very well. It's absolutely imperative that people know what they should be doing prior to. Hurt feelings generally go away because there are always those things that erupt during crisis situations. Sometimes people raise their voices. These are crisis, life and death type of situations we're dealing with. And as long as everybody knows what the playing ground is and what the blueprint is going to be, you generally have a pretty good percentage of success.
Okay. Well, we're at the point where we pretty much have to stop. Any last thought or idea you'd like to leave with folks?
Well, just from a personal standpoint, I want people to understand that wherever they're going and whatever they're doing, if it's in the campus district, look around you, make sure that you're aware of your personal surroundings for your own safety. If for whatever reason you see something that looks out of place and the hair on the back of your neck is standing up, call 911. That's exactly the reason we exist. We don't mind the calls for service. We want to go out there and help people, but we need to know to help you. So please don't hesitate to call.
Okay. Well, our guest in this hour, Lieutenant Todd Short. He is Emergency Planning Lieutenant with the U of I Police Department. His brief includes emergency planning for the campus of the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. And there is a website if people are interested in finding out more information.
If they would like to find out more information, they can go to www.police.illinois.edu. That will be the U of I Police Department's website. There's an emergency planning tab on the homepage. Feel free to click on that. There's all kinds of juicy things you can click on for additional information.
All right. Thanks very much.
Thanks for having me, David.